Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's special election series. Every Wednesday until the day after Election Day on November 6th, we will host a special second hour of Your Call and focus on important races and propositions. Today, we are talking about BART safety, the race for the District 8 BART board seat, and California Proposition 6, which would eliminate state transportation funding from SB1. That is a piece of legislation that increased taxes on gasoline and diesel fuel. But first to BART safety. On Saturday at around 5 p.m., I was on a BART car that appeared to have caught fire. As we were approaching the Civic Center station from Mission and 16th in San Francisco, we saw a wall of flames between the window and the wall. When we heard a loud pop, the train screeched to a halt and smoke filled the car. People panicked and nearly trampled each other. Because we were in the tunnel, we had no idea what was next. I thought the train would either explode or catch fire. After about 30 seconds, we moved through two other cars and finally saw one open door. Luckily, no one was hurt. In response, BART tweeted, quote, "Initial word is it's a blown insulator. Smoke, but no apparent fire." In a later tweet, BART wrote, "When a track insulator fails, it makes a sharp bang noise and creates a lot of smoke, almost like a tiny lightning bolt." This terrifying incident was a reminder of the importance of having reliable and safe public transportation, and safety has become a growing concern for BART riders in the last couple of years. This November, four of the nine BART board of directors are up for a vote. There's also a key statewide and local measure throughout the Bay Area that aims to improve transportation. But before we talk about those races, we're going to discuss safety. And joining me in studio is Bevin Dufty. He was elected to the BART Board of Directors in November 2016. He represents the 9th District, which includes portions of San Francisco. Good morning, Bevin Dufty. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning.
We're also joined by Roy Aguilera, BART's Chief Transportation Officer. He also joins us in studio. Hi, Roy.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. Aaron Baldessari is a reporter covering transportation, the Bay Area's housing shortage, and breaking news. Hi, Aaron. Thank you for coming on.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And Eddie Irons is Communications Director at Transform, a nonprofit addressing climate change and social inequity through transportation solutions. Hi, Eddie. Thank you for joining us.
It's Edie. Thank you very much.
Sorry about that, Edie. Thank you so much. It was a horrific experience. I have to say, I thought we were going to die. I thought that the train would either explode or catch fire. And Roy, I'm just wondering why BART said, quote, "no apparent fire," when what I saw was massive flames. That it was like a wall of flames between the window and the wall.
Yes. So initially what happens in these cases, and I just want to clear up that this is probably not an insulator fire. This is probably a debris fire from what our investigation is looking into. Our investigation is still not complete, but we believe it was a debris fire that created the condition. And what happens is when that debris, if it's metallic, it will create a huge arc, and it will look like a huge fire, but what you're looking at is arc, and the smoke from the material being melted creates that high amount of smoke. So, yes, passengers are going to hear a large pop. In this case, they heard two pops and a high degree of smoke.
Okay, so can you talk about how often this happens?
I would say this happens infrequently, but it does happen. And our operators are typically accustomed to this being an insulator, very similar to an insulator failing and causing that type of smoke. That's why our operator, when he was coming into the station, he was doing the proper procedures. He had his hand over the stop button. He was looking out forward to look to make sure that there was nobody in the trackway. When he was about halfway through the station, he heard the loud pop, and he stopped the train. He hit the stop button, and that's why one car was outside the platform, is because he initiated the stop because he wasn't sure what was going on. So at that point, the train operator made a quick PA announcements to the passengers that said, stand by, stand by, something to the effect that we have a blown insulator and this does happen. He then started communicating with the Operations Control Center in Oakland that basically what the information was of what he was experiencing. He explained how he thought he had a blown insulator. He then explained that there was some smoke.
Can I just cut you off right there? Because, Bevan, what really concerned me, there was no communication in my car. We were still in the tunnel. And I'm so glad the lights didn't go out because that would have been really ugly. But we didn't know what was happening. I mean, we thought, like I said, the train would either explode or catch fire. And if someone, and I understand, I can't imagine being an operator in this situation. You're trying to figure out what's happening in seconds. But if we had gotten an announcement that the first few cars are out of the train, everyone, you will exit shortly. I mean, that would have been a game changer. There was no communication at all. So what is BART's communication protocol when things like this happen?
So, Rose, I want to say that on Saturday, I was texted immediately as the event occurred. I happened to know two people who were on the train independent of one another. And I called the general manager right away, Grace Krennican, and she had not heard of the event, and I described it, and she thought it was a blown insulator. I think what you have spoken to just now and the post that you have on Facebook really underscores the fact that an operator, a station agent, has the opportunity through experience and knowledge to communicate that to riders and to make the situation better. And we failed in this instance. And it appears that the operator was in conversation a lot with our train control, central control facility, and that may have distracted from what I think you're right, is that the individual safety, being a parent myself, if I had a child on the train, that would be my foremost concern, and I think that we did fail.
So I would like to interject here. The train operator initially made the announcement that an insulator was blown and that this happened, and then he was communicating with the control center immediately. He requested the ventilation be established. That's the very first action that the control center needs to do to mitigate the smoke in the station, which was cleared out within 5 minutes. So the operator actually did what he's trained to do.
There was no announcement in my car.
Well, that could have been because of the ventilation being established. That could have been because of all the havoc that was going on in the train, because there was a lot of people on the train. But from our review of the tapes and before he left the cab, he told he got on the public address system and said that he was going to go back and key open doors.
Okay, so as far as I know, and you're right, people were screaming, people were utterly frightened. I did not hear an announcement. The other thing I wanted to ask was about smoke, because I keep hearing about these ventilators. But our car filled with smoke immediately, and I was on the train with my partner. He could not see the people in the back of the train because the smoke was so thick.
And that, again, is why it's so important for the operator to communicate with the control center immediately, because not only was the ventilation established, but then power was dropped at the request of the train operator. And that's how we prevent the air from going from the outside into the cars, because the train for the air conditioning, of course, comes from outside of the vehicle.
The other thing is, as is any situation, you have no idea how you're going to respond, and people started pushing. And luckily, again, someone in the car yelled, "People, everyone stay calm, everyone stay calm." It changed the energy of the train, and people stopped pushing. So luckily, no one got hurt. But again, our car was still in the tunnel, and we had to walk through two other cars to get out. And the door that was open, it was just one door. It wasn't both doors.
Right.
So what happened with that? Why weren't the doors open?
Okay, so I'd like to explain the operation of the train. The train cannot open its doors when one of the cars is outside the station. So what would have happened if there wasn't a self-evacuation, which meant that the patrons didn't open those side doors on their own, the operator would have been able to move the train to the correct berthing and get all train doors into the platform, and then operate the doors in the automatic mode to open those. In this case, by the time that he realized what was happening, communicated with the control center, those doors popped almost immediately once the train came to a stop. And at that point, the operator cannot move the train because people are already exiting the train.
Because we had to walk through two cars to exit.
Yeah, you would have.
It was just one door, not both. Do we know, did the operator open that door or was it a passenger?
We actually had a BART employee that was riding the train that works in the control center that assisted with opening the emergency doors in the cars that were on the platform.
And still, I wonder why BART said no apparent fire when we saw a wall of fire between the window and the wall. And I'm also wondering, has there ever been an instance where that kind of fire could shatter glass? Or could the train potentially catch on fire?
I'm not aware of that ever happening where it shattered the glass. But what you seen was an arc. And that's different from fire. And that was just an arc from an electrical explosion.
And, you know, my concern, obviously, I'm a huge advocate of public transportation, is what if something happens like this again and the entire train is in the tunnel? Bevan, I mean, what about that? How do people get out? What are the procedures in place for that?
I'm going to defer to Roy.
Okay. So, again, if this were to happen in the tunnel, the operator would tell everybody to remain on the train if the debris was out in the trackway, and then we'd move the train in the manual mode away from the fire source.
Bevan, overall,
yes.
What are your thoughts about this in terms of, I mean, I guess I'll be honest here. I mean, I'm in the story because I was on the train.
Absolutely.
What bothered me was I felt like BART was really downplaying this on Twitter and the fact that we didn't have communication in my train. And that there was no call out to the people on the train about what had happened after the fact. And then when we got off the train, people were in hysterics, screaming, crying, especially moms with babies. And there were SFPD and fire department firemen and women on the street. But there was no one to ask people, what happened? How are you?
Right.
And I think it would have really been a game changer for people.
So I have tremendous respect for the line employees that work for BART, and I've had amazing experiences with train operators, and this situation is being investigated and looked into. But the people that I talked to immediately after the event had the same reaction you did. It was as if they thought they might lose their life. And I do understand that in part of social media and how instantaneously we have to respond to things, that initially it was seen as being a blown insulator. And I think that in just trying to explain and say this is something that happens, I can understand that that was not received well. I think that what I have tried to do is to step forward, and after you and I spoke about it, I've tweeted out, I'm going to reach out to the people that I knew on the train and ask them to share their experiences, because I think that information will help the investigation and will help Roy and his job. You know, Roy has been with BART for 34 years, and I say he's old school in the best of all ways. I mean, he's in the modern world of transportation, but, you know, the way he takes care of business, I respect entirely. And so I know that this is going to be handled well. I think this is a very difficult time for BART. Mm-hmm. You know, I recently read the book about BART's history that Mike Keeley wrote, and when you think about how this transit system started, it was with amazing accomplishing things people didn't think possible, like the Transbay Tube, and it was going to feel like you were in a first-class airline seat, and there was just this sense about it. And I think in our country, the federal government really is not invested in transportation. Our system, every escalator in San Francisco is over 40 years old, and the lifespan of an escalator is 25 years. Our trains are, you know, I don't know how they put 89% of the service out every day. And I'm so grateful to the voters that back in 2016 passed Measure R. One of the things that we're doing is acquiring a vacuum, or we have acquired a vacuum train car, so that at night that can go through and suck up the debris and urine and other things that all find their way onto the track. And I think long term, hopefully that will reduce or maybe even eliminate this from happening, you know, in terms of a trash sparking in this case. But, you know, I take this really seriously. I know, you know, we're looking at one another, and, you know, I've swept the BART plazas. I've been in the hallway at Civic Center to discourage people from shooting up. Like, I understand what the riders see.
And Bevan, what about the when we do our drills with the fire departments? You're there also. So we have done 6 drills this year. We are required to do 3. We've done 6 drills within the district, and 3 of them happen to be in San Francisco. So we take safety very, very serious. So we believe that drilling and having good communications with the police departments, the fire departments, is very, very critical. And we understand that patrons, our passengers, want more information, and we'll see what we can do about giving them more information.
And once this investigation is completed, how will it be shared with the public?
I'm sure it will.
And what will you do with this information?
Well, it depends really what we find. And once we have that investigation complete, we're going to make the best that we can with the information and make sure that we don't have a repeat of this incident, because we understand how important transportation is to the Bay Area and how critical BART is to people getting to and from any of what they're doing, whether it's work or family or anything else.
So I want to say that our BART board meeting is Thursday night. We're actually meeting in Pittsburgh to hear from our riders in that area. But I will ask that this be brought before the board and that we be briefed so that it's something that'll be chaptered, available for people to watch online and so forth, and to hold us accountable.
Final thoughts about BART safety?
You know, safety is a very broad word. And I think fundamentally it comes down to how do our riders feel, how do our employees feel. And I think it is of the utmost importance. And I think that we are going to do everything possible to have the trust and the faith of our riders and our journalists. You know, Erin is an outstanding reporter. She is, you know, she's written a lot about BART, and she's feared by some and praised by others. And that's exactly what should happen in her role. And I think that you are holding us accountable. And I'm really grateful that you invited us to come here as part of what voters consider as to what they want in a BART director for their parts of San Francisco. Because ultimately, you know, I have a covenant with the people. They have voted for me, and I take that trust very seriously. And sometimes that puts me in a confrontational position with management or other situations. And, you know, I love to say, and I don't want to disparage it, but I'm at the bottom of the political food chain. In terms of elected officials in San Francisco, it doesn't get any lower since we don't elect a dog catcher. So I want to enjoy this job and to really to really show people that we do care, and to highlight the really good work that's done by people, and to be honest and say, I think that we could have done some things better given how fearful the situation was for them from the people that I've talked to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bevan Dufty was elected to the BART Board of Directors in November 2016. He represents the 9th District, which includes portions of San Francisco. Roy Aguilera is BART's Chief Transportation Officer. Thank you both for coming in, and thank you for answering.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you so much. We are also joined today by Erin Baldessari, reporter covering transportation, the Bay Area's housing shortage and breaking news, and Edie Irons, communications director at Transform, a nonprofit that addresses climate change and social inequity through transportation. First to you, Erin, what are your thoughts about what you just heard from Bevan Dufty and Roy Aguilera about what happened on Saturday?
Well, you know, it's certainly not something that's new to the BART system. I remember back in 2016, there were several incidents of electrical arcing causing fires in Walnut Creek in San Francisco that later ignited debris, or that, you know, ignited debris along the tracks. Those weren't in tunnels, and so, or at least the one in Walnut Creek was not in a tunnel, so I think the smoke was not as much of an issue. But it's certainly something that BART has known about for a long time. You know, in many ways, it's already seeking to address some of these issues. Obviously, BART went to the public in 2016 for a large bond measure that was Measure RR that, you know, is generating $3.5 billion for this reinvestment into the system to deal with some of the problems that they're having with the aging infrastructure. And, you know, I think that the perspective from a lot of riders is that it should have happened a lot sooner, and it can't happen soon enough. Mm. And so that work is ongoing. We're starting to see some of that work taking place, the track shutdowns over Labor Day and earlier in the summer were part of that work. And it's inconvenient to riders, but at the same time, I think these fires and other more serious incidents should be taken seriously. And it's just a reminder that this work is ongoing. It's going to take a long time. And we probably don't have it. And BART is still facing a huge shortfall in the backlog that it needs to fill in order to get to the level it needs to be to assure riders that it is a safe, reliable system.
Edie, what are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. I agree with what Aaron and others have said. It's a terrifying ordeal. But really, the problems that BART is facing, they're an example of what could happen to the rest of our transportation systems throughout the state if Prop 6 passes. You know, we hear about the underfunding of transportation infrastructure and aging infrastructure, and, you know, this is what that looks like. It's a real serious problem. So I'd love to talk a little more about Prop 6. It'll fund not only BART and AC Transit and our other local transportation, public transportation infrastructure, but roads and bridges and bicycling and pedestrian infrastructure across the state. And a lot of those roads and bridges are also, you know, hazardous. More than 1,600 bridges and overpasses in California are structurally deficient and unsafe. 89% of counties have roads that are in poor or at-risk condition, and those conditions actually lead to fatalities and traffic deaths, as well as these transportation, you know, public transportation incidents.
Wow. And I mean, this is, we're talking about one of the wealthiest states in the country where this is happening. Edie, we're definitely going to talk about Prop 6, but we have just a couple questions from listeners. And I don't know if either of you have the answers to this. I mean, I've asked BART spokesman Roy Aguilera this morning, and it just seems hard to get specific answers to these questions. Do you know, Aaron, how often do these kinds of things happen on BART?
Specifically, insulator arcing, I don't have the data to say exactly how many times. I can think of perhaps a handful of times over the past 2 years where we've had these types of incidents. As far as, you know, maintenance in general, you know, one of the biggest delays for BART are things that are happening on the track beyond, stopping for police. So police often actually cause the most delays on BART in terms of stopping trains to search for a suspect. But, when it starts getting into maintenance and equipment problems, it's a very regular occurrence that happens, you know, almost on a daily basis. BART is being delayed for some reason or another related to equipment or maintenance issues.
And then in terms of the smoke, I felt like BART also downplayed that because in my car, people started coughing and it was really, really thick. And luckily, I'm so glad that the doors between the cars were open. So we were able to walk from car to car. But it just, you know, they keep talking about the ventilators, but the car filled with smoke so many times. And we have a few emails from listeners about this. Do you have any idea how that works, Aaron?
You know, I couldn't tell you about the technicality of how that works, but I do know that this is a shared problem amongst transit agencies about how to remove smoke from a confined area, especially when it's, you know, 30 feet underground. There was an incident in Washington, D.C. a number of years ago that was sort of similar in the sense that it was a fire that started underground and, you know, a lot of people suffered, you know, had to go to the hospital or hospitalized actually for smoke inhalation. And there was the Berkeley Tunnels incident a number of years ago also on BART where a number of passengers suffered smoke inhalation. So it seems like it's definitely something that BART should be looking into more closely. I know that they've even actually faced a lawsuit from the Berkeley Tunnels incident because of smoke that people inhaled. So, perhaps something that we should be looking into more closely.
Yes, definitely. Aaron Baldessari is a reporter covering transportation, the Bay Area's housing shortage, and breaking news. She served on the East Bay Times 2017 Pulitzer Prize-winning team for its coverage of the Ghost Ship fire. We're also joined by Edie Irons, Communications Director at Transform, a nonprofit advocacy group addressing climate change and social inequity through transportation and housing solutions. Edie authored Transform's Voter Guide with 20 positions on statewide propositions and Bay Area ballot measures. This is Your Call Special Election Series, and coming up after the break, we will talk about the open BART director seats, and we'll also talk about California Proposition 6. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
And there's so many ways you can take part in the conversation of Your Call on your phone or sending an email to yourcall@kalw.org or by going to yourcallradio.org website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by phone, you can give us a call at toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio.
This is Your Call's election special. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about safety on BART, BART's Board of Directors races, and California Prop 6. Today, we're joined by Aaron Baldessari, a reporter covering transportation, the Bay Area's housing shortage and breaking news, and Edie Irons, Communications Director at Transform, a nonprofit that addresses climate change and social inequity through transportation and housing solutions. Edie, can you talk a little bit about how BART Board of Directors actually address safety concerns? Because over the past couple of years, BART has seen a 12% drop in weekend trips, amounting to about $42 million in ticket revenue cost. And the San Francisco Chronicle's Matir and Ross report that the drop is attributed to Lyft and Uber and also growing safety concerns among riders.
Well, the BART Board of Directors is, you know, responsible for helping set the policies of the agency on all fronts, including safety and you know, how they maintain the system. They serve 4-year terms, and you know, half of the directors are up this year, and there are 2 open seats on the board this year. You know, they have a lot to say, I think, about how you know, how the system prioritizes its funding. We've been talking about Measure RR, the $3.5 billion bond measure that passed in the last election in November 2016, and you know, that was actually a change of course for the system to really buckle down and invest in the maintenance and repair of the core system, whereas for years BART director had been, you know, arguably more focused on expansion into new areas, you know, basically adding riders and serve and new areas of service to the system. So That's one major shift that we've seen, which we at Transform strongly supported, that no, you know, the system itself is aging and, you know, becoming dangerous in the ways that we're seeing now, and we need to reinvest in the core system and in its current ridership.
Hmm. And what would you add?
Yeah, I was just going to add that, you know, so in 2013, the board decided that it was going to increase fares and sort of do regular increases tied to inflation, but that a portion of that would be reinvested into capital expenses to help rehabilitate the system. And so that was one action that the board was able to do to redirect how the district was spending money so that it could reinvest in its aging infrastructure. You know, and as we think about safety, we're not just thinking about the safety of the system in terms of the, you know, the trains, the tracks, the stations, but we're also thinking about crime and sort of the quality of life issues that Bart has been dealing with more recently, with you know, tragic stabbing of 18-year-old Nia Wilson in July, which was preceded by two other deaths on the system. It was followed by another stabbing. So, you know, there's been a lot of concerns about just feeling safe on BART in terms of, you know, is BART able to ensure that people can ride without the fear of being attacked? And that's something else that the board is looking at right now. It's been, you know, considering over the past, you know, several of its biweekly meetings every two weeks. And, you know, the delicate balance is how do you increase safety for riders without impinging on people's civil rights or their privacy. And so that's the debate that's been going on right now. We know that when you increase the police presence, it often disproportionately impacts some groups more than others. We know that when you increase surveillance, it also has a tendency to impact some groups more than others. And so how do you do that thoughtfully and proactively to make sure that you're still being equitable and treating everyone fairly is a tough challenge for BART, and that's something that the board is considering right now. They're looking at vastly expanding their police force. They're looking at doubling the number of fare inspectors that they have. They're looking at upgrading a lot of their video surveillance equipment from analog to digital equipment and introducing really advanced surveillance technologies that a lot of privacy advocates have some concerns about because they could, you know, be very sophisticated in how they track people and their movements in the district. And, you know, so BART recently approved a surveillance policy surveillance use policy that dictates how that, what data is being collected, how that data is being used, who it's sharing it with. So that's going to go a long way increasing the transparency for these new technologies that are introduced. But, you know, it's also considering, for example, vastly expanding its police force. And so, you know, what impact is that going to have on the people who are riding the system? We're not really sure yet. You know, there's obviously data from other, you know, other places that we've seen can have a negative impact on certain groups. So
right, and to that point, we're just looking at a tweet from Janice. Do you know Erin, how she pronounces her last name? Janice L I.
It's Lee.
It's Lee. Thank Lee. You. Janice Lee, she's running for BART Board District 8, and she just tweeted, "What the heck is going on a train that was approaching Civic Center BART, about 8 armed officers, including the Department of Homeland Security." And she included a photo with a number of officers walking through the cars. Do you know how common this is? Or it was yesterday. Erin or Edie, do you know how common this is?
I can't say I know exactly how common that is, but I want to add to what Erin said, which is that, you know, there are alternative strategies out there for dealing with the sort of crime and safety issues on BART, which are important to talk about. And, you know, Transform is very concerned about, you know, inequitable application of the law and surveillance on BART riders, especially people of color, low-income people. We've all seen, you know, more homeless people and, you know, just folks with mental health challenges on BART, I think, in the last few years as you know, that's happening all around us. And, you know, there are other strategies for increasing safety on BART. There's been a pilot program, to have elevator attendants in the San Francisco stations who simply ride the elevators and help patrons, and that helps keep the elevators safe, clean, working. You know, that program seems to have been quite successful. It's employing local people who need jobs. You know, some BART board candidates, including Janice Lee, actually, who you just mentioned, you know, are advocating for more social workers and just personnel in BART stations to, you know, help address some of those safety mm-hmm. issues as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be more police and more surveillance. So that's an issue where voters can, you know, look at these candidates closely and see what types of solutions they are supporting.
Edie Irons is Communications Director with Transform, and Aaron Baldessari is a reporter covering transportation and the Bay Area's housing shortage. Today, it's our Your Call election special. We're talking about safety on BART, the open seats for BART Board of Director, and Proposition 6. If you have any questions about these issues, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Erin, you wanted to jump in there?
I was going to say that BART does have a specialized kind of roving police unit that is tasked with it was funded from a 9/11, you know, in response to 9/11 and, you know, just this anti-terrorism kind of task force. And so their job is to go through the core, sort of the busiest downtown stations and have, you know, police presence. And they're, you know, looking at sort of anti-terrorism. So I'm not sure if that was the same unit that Janice Lee saw, but they are funded from the federal government, and that is their role, is to you know, ensure that those stations are safe from would-be, you know, terrorist activity.
Erin, what else can you tell us about the BART Board of Directors, the people who are running for these seats, and where can we find, you know, extensive information about where they stand on these really important issues?
Well, we are in the process of basically, you know, reaching out to the candidates and surveying them on their attitudes and opinions on these issues. And so you should look out for that in the next week or two, where you can find information on each of the candidates. As far as, you know, the various races, District 8 has become the most competitive of all the races. They have the most people vying for that seat. There's actually at least a half a dozen people who are trying to who have entered into that race. And then it's the other open seat is the one that BART Board Director
Tom Blaylock,
yeah, I was just blanking on his name, excuse me. Tom Blaylock is leaving, and so that one has two candidates who are vying for those seats. In San Francisco, in District 8, you know, we're seeing Janice Lee is, you know, she's probably some of the most experienced politically in terms of, you know, she has served on the, you know, San Francisco Bicycle Coalition and has some high-profile backers, including Assembly Member Phil Ting, and I believe Director Bevin Dufty has supported her, and Supervisor James Kinn, and some of the other folks who are running also have some of that transit experience. Jonathan Lyons has been an advocate for people with disabilities. He previously ran for the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco. And then you have William Walker, who's a former City College of San Francisco student trustee, Melanie Nutter, a former director of the San Francisco Department of the Environment, and a few others. So that will be an interesting race to watch.
And we'll put links to websites that have information about where these people running for the BART board stand on these very important issues. Let's change gears and talk about California Proposition 6. You brought this up, Edie, earlier. Let's talk about, you know, where we are right now. So remind us what happened when state lawmakers passed SB 1 to raise money for transportation in California. What did SB 1 do exactly?
Sure thing. Well, SB 1 was really a landmark bill that made a big and overdue investment in all kinds of transportation infrastructure. We've had a severe maintenance backlog for our roads and bridges and our public transportation infrastructure in California. So it created a sustainable, ongoing revenue source for those needs. The gas tax had not been raised since 1994, not even to keep up with inflation, and so that's been losing value, and, you know, we just haven't been able to keep up with the expenses. So while, you know, state and local roadway maintenance receives the majority of SB1 funding, and again, that's mostly not for new roads or highways, that's for repairing and maintaining and improving our existing systems. The bill also provides, and I should say the total is about $5.4 billion a year for transportation. Sorry, $5.6 billion per year. $1 billion of that goes to public transit, biking and walking infrastructure, complete streets, bike lanes, that sort of thing. And that's about half the budget of for those active transportation programs statewide. So this was a big, important, and overdue investment in, as we've seen, our aging infrastructure, which is really a dangerous liability for the state. And there was a backlash. There was a conservative backlash. You know, the Prop 6 initiative is very closely tied to the Republican Party and John Cox for governor, you know, it's been well publicized that the Republican Party is making this an issue to energize their base in an election that is not very energizing to the Republican base in California, and it's really putting you know, that political ploy is putting our state at risk.
So if Proposition 6 passes, it would get rid of the taxes and the fees passed last year as part of SB1. And then KALW News Cross Currents just did a piece on Prop 6, and they're reporting that Prop 6 would also limit future tax increases.
Right. That's right. It would require all future increases, changes, or new fuel taxes or vehicle fees to be approved by a full statewide electoral vote. And, you know, that is, that could really deal a crippling blow to future climate action in California. You know, those are crucial levers to accelerate the transition to renewable fuels, zero-emission vehicles, and sustainable shared transportation options that we all are going to rely on more and more. So we are very concerned about that as well, and I'm glad you mentioned it.
And Edie, last week we talked about Proposition 3, which would issue about $9 billion in bonds for water-related projects, like wastewater recycling, restoring watersheds and rivers. And the no side is concerned about, you know, who makes the decisions about how to spend that money. When you look at SB1, and according to various reports, in 2020 the amount will increase to over $5 billion. Who decides how to spend this money? How much goes to highways? How much goes to public transportation?
The legislature decided that when they passed SB1, I believe that's baked into the measure itself. So there are, you know, percentages, I believe, for that annual funding. The largest pot, as I mentioned, goes to local roads and highways. Mass Transit gets about $750 million a year. $100 million goes to active transportation. There are also programs to reduce traffic congestion, improve, you know, goods and freight movement, and there's local partnership programs that match transportation funds from local jurisdictions. So that's all baked into the law that that the legislature passed in 2017.
You mentioned the Republican Party that is supporting Proposition 6. And last week, we talked about the incredible voter guide from MapLite and the League of Women Voters. And they just did an amazing job of giving you information about the props and also other races in California, but also the money that's being raised. So let's take a look at that. Again, if you vote yes on Proposition 6, you're voting to get rid of taxes and fees passed last year as part of SB 1. And here are some of the biggest funders. California Republican Party, $466,000. Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, that's the anti-tax group, $320,000. Kevin McCarthy for Congress, $300,000. John Cox for governor, $250,000. There's also the Devin Nunes Campaign Committee, Western Growers, and Making Investments Majority Insured PAC. The no on six side, so basically no on six, we continue with the taxes on gas for SB 1, include California Alliance for Jobs, $3 million, the State Building and Construction Trades Council of California, $2 million, Laborers Pacific Southwest Regional Organizing Coalition, $1.6 million, International Union of Operating Engineers, United Contractors, Working for Working Americans. I don't know what that is. We'd have to look. But all of these top groups are giving over $1 million. So there are a lot of monies being poured into definitely the no on six side, but both sides.
You know, Prop 6 itself, it pours a lot of money into the California economy. Yeah. You know, it would eliminate, if Prop 6 passes, it would eliminate about 68,000 jobs. Many of those are union jobs, so those unions are working very hard against it. And about $183 billion in economic investments, because there are thousands of projects already underway throughout the state. So, you know, probably if you've seen road repair work or, you know, been stuck in traffic due to some Caltrans project or whatever, odds are it's funded by SB1. There are 450 public transit projects already underway, and that's just public transit alone. It's in the thousands. It's something like 5,000 or 6,000 project total already underway.
And we had a caller, and I'm glad you reminded this of reminded us of this. Weekend Caltrain riders will not be able to ride the train to or from San Francisco starting October 6th for about 6 months. I'm reading from the Chronicle right now. The 22nd Street Station and the San Francisco Terminal on 4th Street will be closed to accommodate construction. Riders can take a free bus to connect to and from these stations and the Bayshore Station on the border of San Francisco and Brisbane, which will be the end of the line for weekend rail service. The bus rides are free, but they're expected to add 10 to 20 minutes to each trip. So be sure to spread the word about that. Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Tom in Hayward. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. I'm very glad you're having this show, and I'm very glad to be on. I'm someone who is very opposed to a lot of the people who are behind Proposition 6. I have great disdain for them and the trickery of why they're supporting Proposition 6. It's not the tax as much as to get Republicans out to vote. Now, the reason why I encouraged people, and I myself signed the petitions to put Proposition 6 on the ballot, is that the legislature, including the governor, and to a degree, they are at fault for the infrastructure mess that we're in. They made absolutely no provisions for people who are struggling. Rose, here's another great show. Litter and the number of people who are racing to get to empty or maybe not empty fast food bags before the seagulls do. We are struggling. This 12 cents a gallon and the particularly, which no one is really talking about, the re-registration fees has an enormous effect on it. There's not one thing in the increase in the tax and the increase in the registration fees that helps those of us who are struggling.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a lot of money for it. I know. I see. There's a bridge in between Hayward and San Leandro that's about to fall down. But nonetheless, we're struggling. That's my whole point.
Well, thank you, Tom. I mean, so many people have no choice but to drive. That's the reality in this area. And gas is up to about $3.90 a gallon in some parts of the Bay Area. Aaron, do you want to take this one? What are your thoughts on this? I mean, Tom says, I get it. The Republicans are doing this to bring people out to vote. But what about people who can't afford it?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's... you know, not only has the gas tax increased, but, you know, we just passed a toll increase, so people who have to cross the bay are going to face higher tolls. We see, you know, regular increases in transit fares. Transit fares are already pretty, you know, riding BART is fairly expensive compared to other places in the country. You know, a lot of, counties have their own transportation sales taxes. Alameda has one. Santa Clara, San Mateo is looking into its own transportation sales tax. You know, that's usually half a cent increase, but it all kind of adds up. There's been a number of times when we've gone, you know, the powers that be have gone to voters and asked them to chip in their own money for this. I think if Prop 6 does pass and the tax is repealed, we're probably only going to see more of that. It's going to fall more on cities and counties to pass their own bond measures, to pass their own transportation funding measures, to shore up the transportation in their area. And what we'll lose some of the efficiencies from that because we won't be able to plan as well regionally or to look at it through kind of a big picture lens because people will be looking to invest only within the confines of their own jurisdiction.
Yeah.
So I agree that people are struggling and, you know, it gets more and more expensive to live in the Bay Area, especially with housing prices rising as they are. You know, if we don't have this statewide measure, we're probably just going to see more local measures.
Edie, how would you respond? We have about a minute left.
Yeah, absolutely. Aaron is correct in that last point. But, you know, really, terrible roads are a real financial threat to drivers as well. Drivers actually spend more per year on front-end alignments, shocks, and tire repairs because they're driving on bad roads than they do on the gas tax. And that affects, you know, transit, buses, bicyclists and everybody else as well. And I would also say, you know, the transportation improvement fee, that's the vehicle fee, that's a progressive fee that's based in large part on the value of the vehicle. And in general, you know, this is a sustainable source for low-cost public transportation to improve, which can really be vital to many low-income families and present a better alternative to, you know, to driving, which is one of the, you know, an increasingly expensive way to get around. So yes, people are dependent on driving right now, but we need to move away from that. And this is a reasonable way and a sustainable way to invest in more affordable, more sustainable transportation options for people across the state.
Well, Tom, thanks for the call. We hear you. We'll continue to cover these issues. It's so important. Edie Irons is Communications Director at Transform, a nonprofit group that addresses climate change and social inequity through transportation and housing solutions, and they are on the no on Prop 6 side. Aaron Baldessari is a reporter covering transportation. Edie and Aaron, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thanks to Laura Flynn for producing today's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.